cette présentation en anglais. Parce que je parle pas le français. Okay. My name is Martin House. Just like to start by thanking everybody at Locus Sonus for inviting me. The title of the presentation, as you can see, is No Signal. Then we have Five X's and the Pianomunda Project. So I just want to start explaining maybe the three phrases or the three terms in the title, starting with the Five X's, which is the name of the project that I run in Berlin, which is more or less a kind of self-established research institute, which kind of manifests itself in presentations such as this one, weekly workshops in Berlin across a range of topics, the organization and curation of mostly 12-hour events, which kind of which involve inviting scientists, theorists, artists to discuss what is our major concern with this project, with the Five X's, which is this kind of elaboration of a potential third space, which is kind of formed by this triangle of art, science, and fiction. And perhaps kind of the easiest way of explaining the fiction side of it is to reference two authors, although there are many involved in the influences of the project, two authors being Lewis Carroll, author of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, amongst others, and Thomas Pynchon, author of Gravity's Rainbow, Crying of Lot 49, and so on. And I'll talk about this later, but that's kind of the major concerns. Also, another of our activities, like the second activity is a publication of this compendium work, also titled with the name of the project, which I have one copy here, if anyone wants to see this later on, or a lucky person could even take this away with them. And finally, we're also involved with the development of hardware and software. And I can show an example of one project, which is kind of crossing both hardware and software, which is the Scrying Boards project, which kind of, with the title obviously hinting in this direction of divination. And I've kind of jumped ahead of myself, because what I wanted to start talking about was how what I will present possibly relates to this symposium, which is kind of more or less in simple terms through an examination of electromagnetic phenomena. So this particular project, the Scrying project, is a kind of, the main goal is the kind of elaboration of a platform for artists which kind of merges software and electromagnetic phenomena. So it's kind of basically, I can show at the moment it's very much in a kind of prototype stage. So these are kind of, for example, these boards which can be kind of constructed in some growing apparatus, which will then be either installed within a city space, powered by solar panels. The idea is that the platform is very low power, and or you would journey through the city with this kind of divination technology in your pocket, and then later on, in the comfort of your own home, you could, you know, plug in a USB port and see exactly what software had been broadcast to you through the ether. So this is one example of a hardware project that we're working on. Yeah. Okay. Which relates. So back to the main topic of the presentation. So going back to this idea of no signal, which, or really kind of like with this project, I don't know, I'm kind of jumping around a bit, with this project that we can call the Pianomunda Project, which I'll just arrive at soon. The major question is, what exactly is a signal? I mean, we can talk of, you know, I mean, the thing is that we can talk of just a range of signals. For example, this is a signal, but this, but what it actually means, or what my intentionality behind that signal, what kind of possible agreement I could have with somebody that signal might mean any number of things. I mean, this is a kind of very trivial example, but there's this idea of what exactly is a signal, which obviously involves some idea of code, of decoding, of encryption. So it's kind of like taking these ideas which relate to audio. I mean, we can talk about audio signal, we can talk about video. I mean, there's a whole, you know, the range is broad. Or to electromagnetic signals, and then we come to like transmission, reception. When the, I mean, one question, I mean, there's a kind of, there's like a not this question of what exactly is a signal is something which is kind of puzzling in a way, or it becomes this kind of game, which is what the Piano and the Project is about. It's this game of what is a signal like. Does transmission necessarily imply some kind of intention behind the transmission? I mean, what would it mean to make an accidental transmission? Which is kind of why, or one interest that I have within this kind of electromagnetic phenomena is that, for example, this laptop is accidentally transmitting right now. So within the context of kind of surveillance technologies and so on, it would be possible. This is called Van Eck freaking, where it's possible to pick up the low level emissions from this LCD screen and reconstruct the image. So this was kind of obviously a major concern, particularly when you have more powerful cathode ray tubes. So within kind of government concerns with surveillance, obviously with their own privacy of information, this was a large concern. And obviously there are kind of specific regulations that are probably printed somewhere on the bottom of the laptop saying how, you know, that these emissions have to be controlled to a certain extent. Obviously not for reasons of securing my privacy in this instance. So, yeah, around this idea of what exactly is a signal, and again, within this context of transmission, I was thinking, I mean, this is just kind of something that came to me a few days ago, which was more or less this kind of description of when we have, for example, a radio transmission and we're modulating a high frequency wave with a low frequency audio signal. So this would be amplitude modulation. And in order to receive the signal, we can make a very simple receiver, which is just one single diode, which means that the signal just flows in one direction. Anyway, I mean, it's more complicated, but it's just interesting that this diode is called within this context, it's called a detector. And obviously I was kind of interested in this idea of signals encryption code, and then suddenly you have this word detector, which doesn't really, it's not such a big jump from detector to detective, and ideas of forensic and evidence, which is obviously the same thing. For example, evidence is some kind of signal, you know, like classical forensics or data forensics. I mean, we're looking for these traces of something which has happened, so there's some kind of unintentional signaling that obviously, you know, again, going back to this classical detective story or this context of forensics, you know, the criminal doesn't want to give away themselves, but they have left this evidence. Okay. So, and, yeah, finally, if we ever get beyond the first slide, we have Pianomundo. And this is it's actually an altered diagram of the island Pianomundo, which is an island it's actually not strictly an island, but I call it an island. I mean, it's cut off by a small river and surrounded by, it's in the river would be on the left-hand side of this diagram. On the right-hand side, we have the Baltic coast. And, this is an island in the north of Germany where the project that I'm about to describe will take place in January next year. And as some kind of play, it's kind of interesting to think of this as some sort of magic island in the tradition of other magic islands. For example, The Tempest, Shakespeare's The Tempest, and so on. So it's like this, a magic island which has a very important position within the history of technology. And at the same time, I mean, we come to this in a moment. Okay, so, what happened here? One moment. So, to start with some background. This island, Pianomundo, is very important within Thomas Pynchon's novel Gravity's Rainbow, which is almost totally concerned in some strange way with the V2 or A4 rocket, which we see on the left. And basically, concerned with this myth of the rocket. The site in Peenemünde was the site where the rocket was. I can talk a bit about the history, but we can more or less say within this kind of myth, and this is what I'm kind of interested in, this fictional myth, this is where the rocket was born. This is where the rocket was launched into space for the first time in October 1942, and this is where the rocket was tested, researched, and this, I'll come to this, this is like a later point in the presentation, but just kind of like the sheer amount of technology that was developed at this point is kind of interesting. And also interesting for some kind of scientific or artistic investigation of fiction, and particularly Gravity's Rainbow, is this within Gravity's Rainbow, and I'm not going to talk anything about the book, more or less, apart from that it does exhibit this circular structure, excuse me, which mirrors the parabola of the rocket. So this circle is the parabola kind of extended. The rainbow goes under the earth and comes back up, so it has this circular structure. And the German title of Gravity's Rainbow Gravity's Rainbow is translated in German as the end of the parabola, das Ende der Parabel, which is kind of interesting in the context of this. And also with this kind of, what I really love with this image here, which is the right-hand side would be kind of a representation, I mean, I don't know whether you can see so clearly, but it's just like the right-hand side is like a representation of one of the insignia on the V3 rocket, which is just a later version, a test version, with a witch. And the witch has abandoned her broomstick to ride on the rocket. And this is, I mean, for me, this is a perfect summary of this, the myth of the rocket, you know, this kind of darkness of technology is kind of contained within this image. And there's also another image from another rocket, which kind of acts as a nice counterpart to this one, which I'll come to in a moment. And also within the context of Gravity's Rainbow, we have a kind of interesting catalogue of different fictional tropes and techniques. For example, film narrative, flash forward, analepsis, flash back, the use of comedy, song, slang, strategic language, and what's particularly interesting for me is the way that within the text, equations, circuit diagrams are kind of embedded as this kind of fiction. So it's this very interesting embedding of fiction and technology. Okay. So I kind of spoke a bit about this, which is that this site in Peenemünde, this island, is this very concentrated, technical, historical site. But at the same time, the kind of the stories that it proposes are very transparent. It doesn't take long to read the story about war, because obviously the rockets are tested in Peenemünde and fired from the French coast into Antwerp and London, obviously. So this kind of history of, I'll talk a bit more about this kind of history of technology and war is kind of very transparent, like it becomes almost a cliche or something like this. So I'm kind of interested in, we can also talk about, I mean, to always kind of, like I think behind this whole project, to always have this idea of what exactly is this, the signal, what exactly is being, what exactly is the meaning of what is being said by this story, which is particularly within Germany very, very familiar. Okay, so just some kind of background of, like this kind of, again, this idea of this catalogue of the technological importance of this site, which is, okay, we can, what's the word? We can kind of make this roll call of, okay, it was the first entry of a man-made object into space in October 1942. It was the first use of a programmable analog computer. So we have this idea of, this mathematics becomes embedded in the rocket, like it's following equations. You know, this diagram above, which is a diagram of the Mishgarat, which is the mixing apparatus, which is the guidance system of the rocket. So it's basically mixing different calculations and equations with the rocket's response to a very narrow radio beam. So it's actually kind of integrating this outside, this signal, this guidance signal, with internal gyroscopic measurements and so on. And also, interesting within the context of this parabola, that the rocket is entering, is powered to enter the Earth's atmosphere, so the rocket engines fire, and soon it's kind of the progress of the rocket is plotted by these equations which are embedded within electronics and within the signal the rocket's receiving. And these address the rocket, tell the rocket to stop firing, and the rocket falls back to Earth. So this is literally the gravity's rainbow. So this is when the rocket fall on London, but at first its first journey is into space. So other technology, obviously we have kind of a strong development of missile guidance technologies. At the same time, as a kind of byproduct of everything, the first use of closed circuit television to be able to observe the rockets at a distance. It's also important because a huge amount of money was poured into this one site, Peenemünde, which became, for the people there, and I'll talk about more about this later, some kind of engineer's paradise, some kind of like California in northern Germany, where they were able to work without any outside concerns. They could demand absolutely anything. You know, there were huge developments in kind of supersonic wind tunnels and so on. And I don't know why I write from the other side, which is a bit strange, but it's also interesting as it becomes, it's not really the first test case, but it's still considered as, the site is still considered as an important example for aerial reconnaissance. So for example, there's still documents used by the military which address the sighting of rockets, or the, what am I trying to say? Yeah, basically the way that the Allied forces were able to identify the rocket site and then bomb Peenemünde. This became an important example for aerial reconnaissance. So again, coming back to this idea of signals, that somehow this signal got through to the lady in question, was called Babington Smith. Can't remember her first name. So she is kind of upheld as this heroine of the matter of like ignoring the contradictory remarks of the other officers, saying these are just irrigation ditches, when actually they were ramps for an early predecessor of the V2 rocket. So it's kind of, I'll come to this reconnaissance question quickly, I think. Oh. So, and as I mentioned, we have this kind of very transparent narrative of technology in war. And this, so this, again, I'm doing everything very, very shorthand, so it kind of becomes a bit peculiar. But, so, the rockets were basically tested in Peenemünde, but there was very little production of the rockets. And the rockets were produced in huge quantities. They were very technologically advanced for the time, particularly with these guidance systems and so on. So it was like a huge industry to manufacture these rockets. And in 1943, the production of the rockets moved to the Harz Mountains in the middle of Germany, which would then be in eastern Germany after the war, in the Russian sector. And this I won't talk so much about, but it's important to realize that these huge tunnels where maybe 2,000 or 3,000 rockets were produced were mined out by prisoners within the concentration camps who would actually live within these tunnels. At one point, there were 20,000 people living in the tunnels, and very few survived. So it's kind of, again, this kind of transparent narrative. It's one of the first stories we learn about Peenemünde and the rockets, is that more people died making the rockets than were killed by the rockets as a weapon. And obviously you have a great deal of discussion concerning figures such as Wernher von Braun, who is the main engineer of the V2 rocket program, who then became, after the war, was the chief engineer of NASA and helped engineer the first landing on the moon. At the same time, you have Albert Speer, who was the architect responsible for a lot of Nazi architecture. And he was really the only person who was outraged by what was going on in this camp Mittelbau-Dora. And he was imprisoned after the war for I don't know how long. But, okay. At the same time, kind of encircling the whole story, and here we have the other, the, how is it, the, not the opposite, but some kind of relation to the witch having abandoned her broomstick, is the Frau im Mond, the woman in the moon, and this is like the more popular insignia for the rocket, which kind of places the rocket within this other story, which is why it's kind of interesting from a question of fiction. We have Frau im Mond, which is the title of a Fritz Lang film in 1922, and people who are working on the special effects for the film later worked on the V2 rocket in Peenemünde. There was an unsuccessful launch of a rocket for the film, and the film is kind of situated within this long tradition of going from like the 1890s within German science fiction of this dream of space travel. And again, this becomes this very transparent story that Wernher von Braun, other people working in Peenemünde on the rocket, were solely interested in one thing, which was sending a rocket into space. But this, I mean, again, this is just like some transparent cliche. Like the story doesn't really bear up under much examination, because these rockets were, from the very beginning of Peenemünde in 1936, they were designed as weapons of destruction. Okay. So enough on the rocket. Okay, so within Peenemünde, we're organizing an event which takes place across 3 days, where we invite 18 artists, theorists, scientists to work concretely on projects and discuss the issues around this historical site. And they're composed within 6 working groups, which I'll run through very quickly, because they're not strictly relevant to two working groups are kind of strictly relevant to what I'm kind of interested in here. So the first one is centered around this idea of data forensics. So the idea is to take this... One interesting kind of fact, which is why I started with this diagram of Peenemünde, where I actually intentionally erased the whole landscape. Like the first diagram was mapping the electrical installations in Peenemünde. These I completely removed, so you have this blank map, again with this idea of no signal. And what's important to realize is that after the war, through an international agreement which was forbidding military installations on German territory, the whole island, apart from the very large power station, was destroyed. So it was again bombed by the Russians, and nothing remains above ground, and very quickly the whole area, which is still largely inaccessible for safety reasons. So it's also worth remembering that this was an island which was inaccessible for nearly 60 years. Firstly, as the rocket testing ground, secondly, as the East German Army's training camp. So for 60 years, it was impossible to go there until 1989. And since then, large areas are inaccessible, and it becomes some kind of nature reserve where the trees and the animals kind of return and covering up the traces of what was an enormous military installation to test these rockets. I mean, the scale of the project is kind of impossible really to grasp when you're looking at, I mean, this image here, which is the famous test stand stem where the first rocket entered into space. Yeah. Which at the time would be, yeah, anyway. So the idea, I'm kind of interested in this idea that in this place there is only traces of what was there. There is also no or very little electricity, which within the context of electromagnetic research is important. I mean, I don't know whether you're familiar with this, just this kind of ubiquitous city-wide 50 hertz hum from power lines or tram lines, but here there's nothing. So it's this kind of empty slate almost. But within this context, I was kind of interested in this idea of what could be hidden within this landscape, and the landscape referring to both this physical landscape, this kind of fictional landscape from the history of this area, and also this electromagnetic landscape. So, yeah, just like a few ideas, which I kind of more or less covered, but one other idea which is important within this context is this idea of, and also within this notion of signals and no signals, is this idea of steganography, which quite simply refers to the embedding of one piece of information or signal within another piece of information. So one could, for example, describe any kind of radio transmission as steganographic if we're lacking the right equipment to decode it. But more classical examples are, for example, this image, which could very well have a text embedded within it, which would be unnoticeable to anyone unless they were looking for that text specifically, unless they knew that a certain technique had been used to hide the text within this image, for example, encoding the textual information in, I don't know, like the fifth pixel of each dark point within the forest. And also, further on, one very, very early example of stenographic technique, which is obviously predates the use of computers and so on, was the tattooing of a message, shaving the head of a person, tattooing a message on their head, waiting for the hair to grow back, and then sending the person off to the intended recipient of the message, who could then reshave the person's head and read the message. So it's kind of, what I'm kind of interested in is how these kind of techniques are then, this whole obsession with Pianomundra is like how you can take these things and map them more into this digital technology, how these kind of techniques or ideas or this idea of signals is also relevant to this software landscape or this data landscape, but at the same time you can have this inspiration from this real landscape. The next working group I completely skip. The third one I don't, because it also has some kind of relevance. So this third working group is called WASTE, or WASTE, which stands for We Await Silent Tristero's Empire, which is a reference from Thomas Pynchon's The Crying of Lot 49, and the symbol here, the muted post horn. So the kind of the central idea of this working group is that this WASTE, in very, very short terms, is an underground postal network, but the kind of the central conceit of the novel is that we're not sure whether this underground postal network actually exists or whether it's just the manifestation of paranoia of finding too many signals everywhere. For example, the main character, Oedipus Mas, sees the symbol everywhere on dustbins, urinals, everywhere, and takes this sign, I think also a tattoo at some point, takes this sign as an indication that this network does exist. But there is no, yeah, it's just a kind of an amplification of paranoia. But, I mean, as this is a nice quote here from some other critic, where the WASTE is a hoax that counterfeits such a conspiracy. So just these levels of play here are kind of interesting within the domain of signals. Endophysics, we skip. Black box, we skip. And finally getting to kind of one heart of the matter, which is this investigation of electromagnetic phenomena, which I've more or less been involved with for several years with workshops in Oslo and Berlin, and over the last 3 or 4 months my own research on this island of Pianomundra where this picture was taken, which shows a coil of wire 1.2 kilometers long, which then enters just a very simple amplifier. So it's a very basic translation from electromagnetic phenomena to the audible, within the audible frequency range. And I can play some examples of this. At the same time, this kind of interest in the idea of signals, I mean, this is where we kind of come to some kind of concrete practice, which is I am with this apparatus and I tested maybe 9 different variants, different apparatus to see how they, you know, another question within this idea of signals and reception is how, you know, this apparatus, some kind of receiver, is not, it is kind of within the world, and it is has its own influence within these kind of phenomena. For example, as does my body, the architecture of this room, the architecture of the city, any kind of metal, large amounts of metal in walls and so on. I mean, these are kind of large-scale examples, like macro examples, whereas smaller, you know, smaller examples can still influence a phenomena. So I was interested in how we can't really remove the device that we're using as a receiver from the equation. And also within this kind of, within this notion of signals, there are two kind of cultural references, which is a very large culture of, and this kind of phenomenon is called like VLF, which means very low frequency, and there's a whole scale going down to ULF, which is ultra low frequency, which is maybe below 50 hertz, and there's a very large kind of amateur community, which is exactly concerned with looking at these low frequency signals and trying to figure out what they might mean or where they might come from. For example, military transmissions, submarines use low frequency signals and so on like this. People are kind of at this is where it kind of mapped into this waste or this underground phenomena, looking at these, you know, very actively looking at these signals. At the same time, you have another community, which is the EVP community, the electronic voice phenomena, or ITC at the same time, instrumental transcommunication, which is looking at, I mean, in very simple terms, it's concerned with ghost radio, which is the use of radio as a way of receiving signals from, and this is where the question mark is, from, you know, from the dead, from a parallel universe, from some kind of, I mean, all these theories, but it's a kind of an interesting community, and some artists have also worked with this kind of phenomena, such as Leif Elgren, who's also kind of interesting and collected a lot of these recordings of researchers working with electronic voice phenomena, which at the same time was more or less coming into being during the Second World War, so there is some kind of overlap. Where are we now? Damn. So, let me see. So this, for some reason, the reconnaissance stuff ends up here. So this is a famous aerial photograph of the rocket test stands prior to bombing in 1944. So this is kind of interesting just because it does represent this kind of test case for reconnaissance, and what is reconnaissance if not some kind of divining of signals. So we have this kind of network of concerns with hiding technology, with revelation, uncovering, reconnaissance, detection, decoding, encryption, and control. And like overriding that network is this title of Enigma, which is interestingly enough the name which Alan Turing gave to his decoding machine. Okay. The interval I skip. Okay. So my primary kind of interest within this field of electromagnetic research is that it becomes an investigation of substance, and this is kind of like the core of this signal obsession, is what precisely, or how does this very concrete investigation deal with something where the substance is kind of questionable, like exactly what, you know, we can talk about kind of waves propagating, magnetic fields, induction and so on, but it's kind of the question of substance is still very much, particularly within a scientific domain, the question of substance of electromagnetic phenomena is very much open to question, and you can kind of trace this route through Maxwell in the 19th century, Einstein, it becomes like centering on this term ether, like does this ether have any substance is the major question. This question is kind of more or less unsolved, but I'm more interested in artistic investigation of substance. And just to kind of wrap up, so these, I play one or two recordings taken using various apparatus in Pianomundo. How much time do I have? Okay. Thank you. Is there any questions?